This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. military troops flying around the clock have managed their biggest day of airlifts out of Afghanistan by far. But deadly violence that has blocked many desperate Afghans and foreigners from entering Kabul's airport persisted Monday. The Taliban signaled that they may insist on the airlifts ending at the end of the month. The White House says that 28 U.S. military flights carried about 10,000 people to safety over a 24-hour period that ended early Monday morning, and 15 C-17 flights over a 12-hour period brought about another 6,600 people. For the first time, the numbers have met and exceeded U.S. projections. Australia's prime minister says that Australian and New Zealand officials evacuated more than 650 people from Kabul airport over Monday night. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that Tuesday, five flights had left the airport and the busiest day of Australian involvement in evacuations since the Taliban took control of the country. Morrison told Nine Network Television that the evacuated people included Australians, New Zealanders, and Afghans. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris delivered a sharp rebuke to China for its incursions in the South China Sea, warning its actions there amount to coercion and intimidation, and affirming that the U.S. will support its allies in the region against Beijing's advances. That speech sought to cement the U.S. commitment to supporting its allies in an area of growing importance to the Biden administration, which has made countering China's influence globally a centerpiece of its foreign policy. Harris, who is in a week-long swing through Southeast Asia, declared that the U.S. stands with the allies and other partners in the face that threatens from China. This is VOA News. The representative of Russia and South Korea for the six-party talks met in Seoul on Tuesday to discuss stalled nuclear diplomacy with North Korea. The Russian deputy foreign minister and South Korean special representative for Korean Peninsula Peace and Security Affairs held a meeting at the Plaza Hotel. Pyongyang's threats against Seoul and Washington over their ongoing combined military drills. Soon Kim, U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea, had met with another on Monday where they discussed possible ways to facilitate diplomacy, but did not announce any specific plans. The U.S. has given full approval to the COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer. The Food and Drug Administration's decision on Monday may help lift public confidence in vaccinations as the nation battles the most contagious coronavirus mutant yet. The FDA has never before had so much evidence to judge a shot's safety. More than 200 million doses already have been administered in the U.S. since emergency use began in December. The decision could push some vaccine holdouts toward getting the shots, could spur more vaccine mandates by companies, universities, and local governments as well. Hawaii's governor is urging residents and potential visitors to limit travel to the islands to essential businesses while the state struggles to control outbreaks of the Delta variant of the coronavirus. The governor, David Ige, wants to curtail travel to Hawaii through the end of October. In his words, it is a risky time to be traveling right now. He says that restaurant capacity has been restricted and there is limited access to rental cars. Residents across the waterlogged Northeast United States are clearing mud and tearing out soggy carpets after deluges of dropped by Tropical Storm Henri. Smell of sewage filled the air in a New Jersey retirement community as people returned to their soaked homes and possessions on Monday. The storm's remnants still threaten further flooding in New England as they made a slow trek back to sea. Ukraine is set to celebrate its 30 years of independence from the Soviet Union Monday. Amid tense relations with Russia, the Ukrainian lawmakers declared independence on 24th of August 1991, days after the hardline communist coup against the Soviet president Mikhail Gorbachev failed. More than 90% of Ukrainians approved the decision in a referendum that December when the Soviet Union officially ceased to exist. Since then, Ukraine passed through tumultuous periods of consolidation of its internal and foreign policies, its political institutes, and painful search for its own identity. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 24, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian President-elect Hakainde Hichilema is being sworn in today, Tuesday.
We don't have anything yet to celebrate about. We are just gearing ourselves to say, let us deliver to the people of this country.
A conversation with the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major Zambian city. Somalia's opposition candidates reject government's election plan. Rwanda launches COVID-19 vaccination campaign in the capital, Kigali. And Liberia's president suspends an official for alleged corruption and warns would-be investors.
One of the things we see in Africa is all investors coming to the country want to be associated with the president of the office, which is wrong. Investors must learn to follow the procedure. There should be no shortcut.
Tanzania's president's alleged remarks about female soccer players, and a Senegalese man dresses in a woman's clothing to take a university entrance exam. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Several African leaders and government officials have begun arriving in the Zambian capital, Lusaka, for today's inauguration of President-elect Hakainde Hichilema of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, following that country's August 12 election. UPND spokesperson Cornelius Mwitwa says there is nothing yet to celebrate for the UPND, but simply getting ready to deliver for the people of Zambia.
Everything right now is in the hands of the government operators. The secretary to cabinet is the one who is in charge. And true to what we have stood for 22 years now is to respect the rule of law, to respect government which is in place. And we don't want to do a takeover of government before we are close to the authority so to do.
Any idea how many foreign leaders are expected for today's ceremony?
I think that a number of leaders around the region, the SADC, will be there. I'm also aware that even the Brentwood institutions, the IMF and the World Bank, have indicated that they are sending representatives to this inauguration for the very first time in the history of this country. And for us, that is confidence expressed as to the leadership that is coming through. We will be sincere to ensure that we do not let the people of this country down, we do not let the international community down.
Exactly so, because I want to believe that this is an exciting day for the UPND, but most especially the president-elect. After all, this is or was the sixth time that he ran for president of Zambia.
Yes, of course, that joy cannot be hidden. For all who have stood in this struggle in the UPND, very faithful people, it has been a long struggle. But for HH and those of us who are privileged to be around him, while the rest of the nation is celebrating, we don't have anything yet to celebrate about. We are just gearing ourselves to say, let us deliver to the people of this country. And when we have delivered, maybe at that stage, that is the time we'll be able to say, can we also now celebrate? We are not celebrating a victory in terms of a vote. We want to celebrate victory in terms of attending to the challenges of the people, ending political violence, ending political cadarism, ending political impunity, reducing and eradicating corruption, creating jobs for many young people, being able to diversify the agricultural sector away from monopoly of dependence on mining. These are some of the things we want to be able to pursue vigorously to ensure that the people of this country at last should be able to say, here's a leadership in place that has responded. We may not do everything we said we will do, but we'll do our best to ensure that we gravitate in the direction of bringing to fruition the aspirations of the people of Zambia.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Cornelius Mwitwa is spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. In Zambia, 27-year-old George Mwanza is the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major city. Mwanza, who stood as an independent candidate, was declared winner of the Chipata Council mayor seat. He defeated the second-placed candidate with over 20,000 votes. Youth Group says Mwanza's victory sends a strong signal that young people can be part of the decision-making process by seeking political office. Mwanza tells viewers Peter Clotty that leadership is not about age, but about one's ability to resolve the challenges of the people.
I was so happy when I was declared a winner of the 2021 mayoral elections and subsequently becoming the youngest mayor, the youngest person to hold the position of mayor in the entire Republic of Zambia.
What motivated you to become an independent candidate? Because the election appeared to be split down the middle. Either you are going for the main opposition UPND alliance or the ruling party, the Patriotic Front. So what motivated you to decide that you want to be an independent candidate?
I come from a district where it's predominantly dominated by the youth and women. But now I've been on the ground and working with them. I'm a passionate advocate of decentralization, or simply put, power to the people. And when time for elections came, I offered myself to stand on the PF ticket. But as usual, the adoption were being determined on age and corruption. And I was kicked out. So I moved on and I said, the people told me that we believe in your leadership, as an individual and not as a political party. So go ahead with the people who vote for you. And I went ahead to stand to contest elections as an independent mayor. And it has never happened from 1964 when we got independent that someone won an election as mayor on an independent ticket.
What message does your victory send to the youth in Chipata and the entire country, Zambia?
You know, we only have 5 cities in Zambia. And one of it is being headed by me as the youngest mayor. The message here is that it's possible for any person, any young person to make it, that success is achievable, that indeed it's possible to realize, to dream and realize our dream. It's possible for a young person to dream big and that the dreams do come true. It's also possible for a young person to be able to make a difference and break all barriers, imaginary or real barriers. That is what my victory actually simply means.
George Mwanza, you know expectations are high for you to meet as a youth because some people will say that the youth are not experienced, they don't have the necessary tools or skill set to administer effectively as mayors or councillors or top political positions. So you have a lot to prove. What message do you want to send to people whose expectations are high and those who are skeptical about your abilities to govern effectively as a mayor of Chipata?
I would like to say that the people of Chipata City, the people of Zambia, should know that the time to provide progressive leadership has come. And for me, I know that what is most important is the drive to make a change. Experience, we've had a lot of elderly people that have gone before us, become mayors and whatnot, but they've not been able to effect the change that the people have always aspired to see. What I'm simply telling them is that we have the drive, I have the energy to effect the change. And the leadership pendulum in this world, in this country, it is drifting towards youth because we have the education, we have the energy and the passion, the drive to effect the change. And it's in any case, we have lived the experience that young people are facing, that of unemployment, that of lack of support and whatnot. So we are saying that we are here to effect the change. We are here to modernize and bring innovation in the system, in the way that things are being run at the city council level. And that is what we are going to do. So I would like to tell and assure everyone else that indeed we are going to effect the change and make our generation proud and that of the old people.
George Mwanza is the youngest candidate ever to be elected mayor of a major Zambian city. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Somalia's opposition presidential candidates for September's indirect election have rejected the government's election plan. Mohamed Kahia reports from Mogadishu.
The Opposition Council of Presidential Candidates, or CPS, released a statement Monday saying they reject a new election roadmap proposed by the federal government and regional leaders. The opposition argues that the process will give five regional leaders too much power in selecting the electoral delegates who will choose 275 members of parliament. This is opposition leader Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. He says there is need for a clear path towards the process on who will select the delegates and whom they represent, since the parliamentary polls is based on 4.5 power sharing formula. The former head of state adds they don't want another delay on the polls, which were already delayed twice before, and thus demands a clear timetable. The 4.5 formula refers to a plan for sharing power among Somalia's dominant clans. The indirect election of the parliamentarians is scheduled to commence early next month, before the crucial presidential poll on October 10th. But analysts say this new stalemate will delay the presidential poll, if not urgently resolved. Abdel Fattah Hassan is a Somali political analyst. He says the new grievance by the opposition members will further push back the process to an unspecified date. He recommends urgent dialogue by the political stakeholders to avoid another election setback in the fragile nation. Somalia's election process was originally scheduled to start last year, but has been repeatedly delayed by political disagreements in spite of pressure from the international community. In April, Somali lawmakers voted for an extension of the president's mandate, only to reverse that decision in May, following violent clashes between opposition and government supporters in the capital, Mogadishu. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 24. The Rwandan government on Monday launched the third phase of its COVID-19 vaccination campaign in the capital, Kigali, targeting all residents aged 18 years and above. The Ministry of Local Government has warned that those who refuse to be vaccinated may be denied some services in the future. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali.
Hundreds of Kigali residents, mainly youth, on Monday turned out in big numbers at the 30-designated sites to get their COVID-19 vaccines. A cross-section of Rwandans who spoke with VOA expressed their happiness for what they called an opportunity to save their lives from the deadly pandemic. At first, the government targeted elderly people and we as youth. We thought our turn might take a long time, but I'm very happy and I was amazed to be informed that we can get the vaccine shot. I knew some people who died from COVID-19. That's why I didn't hesitate to come. I am very glad and pleased to have been able to come to take the vaccine. As a young Rwandan, this is a gift granted by the government. I have just been vaccinated now and I feel very well. I am well. I thank countries that are supporting Rwanda to get these vaccines that are saving us. The Minister of Local Government says that it was a good thing that many Rwandans are eager to be vaccinated. Gatabazi Jean-Marie Vianney is the minister. He says people should know that they need vaccines for their own well-being, but also for accessing other public services. You cannot say you won't be vaccinated when the government provides the vaccine. We are reaching on a principle where if you didn't adhere to measures others have been respecting, then you would be privated some services. This vaccination campaign is currently being conducted in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. But as Daniel Ngamije, the Minister of Health, says, the ministry is working hard to achieve its vaccination target.
Our intention is to reach at least 30% of our population which will be vaccinated by the end of this year. And next year, 60% of our population, we expect to get them vaccinated. So this is our target. And we thank all partners who are coming to join us to get vaccines available for us.
The British ambassador to Rwanda, Omar Dahir, says the UK has realized that to win the fight against COVID-19, countries need to be in the battle together. He says his country donates more doses to African countries through COVAX, the worldwide initiative to get vaccines to low-income nations.
I think we certainly are all in it together, because we're very clear in the UK that we can't solve this issue by just vaccinating our own population or just vaccinating the European population. If this disease continues to be prevalent in other parts of the world, it will always be a threat to us all. We are going to donate 100 million doses in general, by June next year, 80 million of which will go to COVAX.
The new Rwanda vaccination campaign targets 90% of all adult residents of Kigali City in the next 2 weeks. So far, the government says more than 1 million people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. The country is preoccupied with bringing back economic activities in Kigali on a track. Eugene Wimana for VOA Daybreak Africa, Kigali, Rwanda.
Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Nathaniel McGee, says President George Weah does not tolerate any act of corruption. He says to reinforce that message, the president has appointed a new chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission and proposed a law to the national legislature to empower the country's Anti-Corruption Commission. This comes after President Weah on Monday suspended Mrs. Makena Keita, Presidential Special Projects Coordinator, for soliciting $5 million from a group of South African businessmen who were in Liberia to explore investment opportunities. In a letter published in the local media, the South Africans said they were invited to Liberia by Mrs. Keita to discuss their proposals for power, energy, and waste management projects. Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, McGee, says President Weah repeated his advice for would-be investors to always work with the National Investment Commission of Liberia.
That the president does not tolerate any act of corruption. Because of that, the president has appointed a new LACC chairman. The president has presented a legislation to the legislature to empower the LACC. The president is very serious in making sure that corruption is dealt with. So not even individual associates of the president will engage in anything and go with impunity. So the fact that Mrs. Keita works in the president's office in the Ministry of State, and she has been complained, that's the reason why the president took the action to make sure that she's suspended. And an immediate investigation is done by the legal advisor, who is the lawyer of the president and also the Ministry of State. And if he establishes sufficient reason, I mean, Ms. Keita needs to be turned over to the Ministry of Justice, therefore she will be.
You said these are allegations. Who made the allegations?
There's one group from South Africa. They complained that they were invited by some group to Liberia, but they interacted with Ms. Keita. And all these different allegations, they made a complaint, and the complaint has been looked through.
Why did President Weah send Ms. Keita to his personal lawyer or his lawyer and not to the Anti-Corruption Commission?
Ms. Keita works in the office of the presidency. So the president lawyer needs to first of all establish where the fights are there. And once the fights are there, then she can go to Justice Ministry, because she's a low-level employee. And so there's a process in the ministry you have to go through. So you have to exhaust that before going to the Ministry of Justice. The legal advisor is an internal lawyer of the ministry, and he established a fight. When he established a fight, he advises the president that the matter needs to go to the Ministry of Justice, then will proceed to that level. But if that reaches a level, we have to go to justice. So the first thing you have to find out what transpired, who were involved, and those who were involved, I'm told police have already arrested some. Those who were arrested by the police who do not work for the Ministry of State, they will be transferred to the Ministry of Justice.
So why does the president's office have or is involved in investment matters rather than the National Investment Commission?
I can't answer that question. You're listening to the president. Firstly, when investors come to the country, they need to go to the National Investment Commission. The president reiterated that position today, that investors should stop trying to find a shortcut to go to the presidency. One of the things we've seen in Africa is all investors coming to the country want to be associated with the president's office, which is wrong. Investors must learn to follow the procedure. There should be no shortcut. Individuals wanting to come to Liberia to invest, Liberia is a free country. You have the right to come to invest. When any individual tells you that, look, I want to take you to the presidency, look, I'm going to the presidency, you do not need any special favoritism or favor to come and see the president. Once you go through the NIC, and the NIC believes you're a genuine investor and there's a need to see the president, the NIC will make sure that you see the president. And nobody should tell you, no, I can make you see the Minister of State or I can make you see the Minister of Finance.
There's a saying that where there is smoke, there is fire. So therefore, there are some...
When fire is there, we'll establish the fire and we'll take the appropriate action.
Okay, I was saying that there are some who are suggesting that what Ms. Keita is accused of could be a common practice in Liberia.
So this is Africa. This is Africa. And individuals who may be saying that maybe they have been engaged in this kind of thing. But what we're saying, you got to hold individual responsible for what they do. You can't generalize things.
Thank you very much again, Mr. McGee. It's always very nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Nathaniel McGee is Liberia's Minister of State for Presidential Affairs. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. This month, a young man and a woman in Senegal were sentenced to a week in prison after the man dressed in a woman's clothes and attempted to present himself as a woman, his girlfriend, in order to take the English part of the baccalaureate. Known as the BSc, the exam is required to enter public universities in Senegal, but the rates of passing are low. Hadi Ba, a philosophy professor and education expert in Senegal, talks to Rikish Triak about how the BSc legacy inherited from the colonial system has been challenging for Senegal's youth.
It is an obstacle because we have something like, of the 100,000 people doing the bag, you will have something like 30% that would have the bag. So, and if you don't have the bag, you can go to public universities. You can do a lot of stuff. So it's an obstacle. It's a very important exam socially.
Why do you think the rate is so low of succeeding in the BAC, and is it an indication that there needs to be some kind of change in the educational system in Senegal?
It's an indication of the quality of the education system, actually. We have an education system that produces only people, a generation, only 30% has the capacity to have the high school exam. It is also an indication of the nature of the system, because we have inherited from the French a very selective system, in which people are not teachers, for example, will not consider that it is a reflection of themselves that their students do not succeed. They will just consider that they are here to select the best of the students. So this is why we have this very low rate.
That was Hadi Ba, a philosophy professor and education expert in Senegal. He was speaking to Ricky Strayak from Dakar. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan is being criticized for saying that women soccer players have flat chests and therefore may not be good-looking for marriage. The French news agency reported that the president made the remarks at a ceremony on Sunday to celebrate the victory of the National Men's Soccer Team Championship. Neville Mina is the secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He says while President Suluhu Hassan did make the comment, when placed in proper context, she was really rooting for Tanzanian female footballers.
It is true that President Samia, that's what she said, but the context was like sympathizing with the women footballers, that they play very hard and sometimes they bring praise to our country. They do very well compared to their male counterparts. But at the end of the day, they end up with nothing. So she was just calling up the football, soccer family and football stakeholders and other sports fans in Tanzania to make sure that women footballers, they end up with something when they retire. And she was like making joke around of it that, you know, these ladies, they pray so hard and sometimes their chests are flattered. They can't even attract men to get married. So if being the case, why should not the soccer family and the other stakeholders take care of these ladies so that at least they get consoled by having something when they get out of football in terms of retiring or going out to pursue other interests. Actually, that's what she meant in her speech.
I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.